welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gather to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, a senatorial debate with Republican Joe Miller, Democrat Scott McAdams, and write-in candidate Lisa Murkowski. The Rotary Clubs of Anchorage and the Alaska World Affairs Council hosted the candidates running for Senator of Alaska at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage on Tuesday, October 26th.
Okay, welcome to the weekly meeting of the Anchorage Rotary Club. I'm Alex Slivka, your president in training. President Cheryl is in Russia this week working to complete our project in Bernal. I want to thank everybody for attending today. This week's meeting is a coordinated effort between all the Rotary Clubs in Anchorage and the Alaska World Affairs Council. There will be no regular Rotary business in order that we have as much time to hear what the candidates have to say. We are very honored today to have with us three contenders for the upcoming election for United States Senator. They will be introducing themselves shortly. We're also very honored to have participating with us a panel of four students from West High's We the People program. Acting as moderators on behalf of Anchorage Rotary, Steve Lindbeck, and from the Alaska World Affairs Council, Lisa Falsko. The ground rules. After their opening statements, 2 minutes each, our moderators will be posing questions to each candidate who will have 1 minute to respond and a further minute to later rebut their opponents. In between the questions will be a lightning round of questions where candidates will have 5 seconds to provide one-word answers. We have a volunteer timer in front, Oksana Lazareva, who will be signaling 15 seconds in the end, and I will be deploying the bell if I need to. We have gathered these questions in advance. There will be no questions from the floor. This will last till about 1 o'clock, and at that time, the students from West will have the opportunity to ask questions of the candidates. At about 1:15, we will ask each candidate to make a closing statement. Again, 2 minutes. After that, we will have our traditional split the pot drawing, and the meeting will adjourn. With that, let's start with Scott McAdams.
Well, thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for being here today. It's important that folks get out, hear the candidates, take a look at the issues that are surrounding this campaign and this election. My name's Scott McAdams. As of a week ago, I'm the former mayor of the city and borough of Sitka. I'm a dad and a husband. I'm a former commercial fisherman and a former football coach. I've been the chair of a local school board and the president of the statewide school board association. But first and foremost, I'm an Alaskan. I love this state. I moved here at age 7, went to elementary school here. This is the state that I love. When I die, they will bury me here. I'm running for United States Senate because I believe that Alaskan communities and Alaska's people are more important than Washington politics. Like so many Alaskans, I'm frustrated with the gridlock in Washington, D.C., much of which I believe is based in partisanship. I believe Alaska needs a United States Senator who recognizes that we're a young state, that we're an infrastructure poor state, that as a matter of equal footing, we deserve to be invested in. I think it's important that we recognize that Alaska's next United States Senator acknowledges Alaska's natural resources as being the environmentally responsible choice in a global marketplace, that we can develop our resources responsibly, that we can put Alaskans to work and build our economy and create jobs. I think it's also critically important that Alaska have a senator who recognizes that Social Security is a promise made to America's seniors and that a robust public education is a promise we need to keep to Alaska's kids. And finally, I think it's important that Alaska have a United States Senator who speaks the language of community, who recognizes what makes America great is not so much our federal system as it is our service club culture in this country, local people who stand up in local communities and say, yes, we can, and do things on behalf of one another. So thanks for having me. Thanks for hosting me.
Joe Miller.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. Thank the Rotarians for putting on this forum. That's a phenomenal opportunity for you to get to know more about the candidates. One of the things about this race is that a lot of you want to know more about us. You want to know more about us personally, and certainly personal issues in this general race have certainly been front and center. So I wanted to give you a little bit of an opportunity to tell you a little bit about my life. Most of you have probably heard I grew up in Kansas. I came to Alaska 16 years ago, and I started out in Anchorage. I lived here amongst you for 4 years, spent some time serving in the downtown soup kitchen, but continued a life of service into the kind of rural areas of the state, Tok, Alaska. I was a state magistrate there, started the first rural therapeutic drug court in the state, and then went on up to Fairbanks. Spent another 8 years in Fairbanks as a U.S. magistrate judge part-time, and served in that capacity as well. But the life of service actually started at an early age. My mom and dad taught me the values of hard work and serving others. At about 10 years old, I decided that Kansas, the land of tornadoes. I wanted to make sure that I could help my community in times of need, and so I became an amateur radio operator and spent time actually working to make sure that people understood and knew when natural disasters were coming. And that kind of brought me into the idea that, you know, maybe I wanted to serve my country in other ways too. I applied for the military academy, and I'd encourage you young men and women that are thinking about a life of service to consider the academies. At the United States Military Academy, West Point, the motto while we were there was to provide a lifetime of service. And that's really what's driven me. That lifetime of service has given me ups and downs, no questions about it. We can certainly see in my life that mistakes have been made, but we've also seen in my life things that I can learn from and things that we've gone through during that life of service. A lot of times when we choose a life of service, it's not just that we get to go out and lead, but it's also that we get to go out and sacrifice. That's what this race is about, sacrificing in order to make sure that this state does have a future. That's why Kathleen and I have opened our lives to inspection, because we understand that we have to have men and women of character and leadership to move us beyond where we're at today and to a new direction for the state of Alaska so that we do have jobs in the future.
Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Thank you, and good afternoon to all of you. Thank you to the Rotary for hosting this joint meeting, and to the World Affairs Council for your participation as well. I appreciate the commitment to service that so many of you in Rotary dedicate yourself to engaging and really fostering the best in us all. Ted Stevens got away with a lot in the United States Senate. I think we know that. But the one thing that Ted was able to do that no other senator has been able to do, he got permission to put on his Senate desk a little stand-up that had the Rotary four-way test. And I said, how'd you get permission to do that? And he said, Lisa, he said, if the senators in this chamber cannot meet this test, the test of truth, of fairness, of goodwill and friendship and beneficial to all, then they shouldn't be serving in the United States Senate at all. And you know what? Ted Stevens was absolutely right on that. And I have used that. I have used that, the Rotarian guiding principles, as I have operated through my tenure in the Senate. First, I've developed acquaintances, an opportunity to serve. I've made an effort to reach out to all Alaska, regardless of the region, to listen and understand. It's enabled me to represent all of Alaska. And doing the work that I have done, I have maintained the highest ethical standards. I've applied service both to myself professionally, and I have encouraged that within my family. And fourth, I believe that we've got a duty to govern and do it in a way that provides an example to others, other nations, to promote international peace and goodwill there. And because of my service, I believe that I meet that fourth criteria, and that is beneficial to all, beneficial to those I serve here in Alaska. I thank you, and I look forward to a great debate today.
Okay, we're off and running. Question number one. A natural gas pipeline from the North Slope is widely considered Alaska's best future economic hope. The question is, should the federal government take any specific actions, such as larger federal loan guarantees, or perhaps climate change legislation with natural gas consumption incentives, to encourage this project? Scott McAdams first.
Thank you. Absolutely, I believe there's a federal role in expediting permitting, as well as securing federal loan guarantees for the construction of a gas pipeline. And it is true that natural gas is a clean-burning conversion fuel that can help fuel America, our utilities, once we bring that product to market. You know, my position on the gas line as it relates to Route has been that I support whatever gas line that puts Alaskans to work and brings our product to market. Every energy realist recognizes that in the short term, throughout the course of most of our lives, there's still going to be a need for new carbon-based energy to come online. That as we transition from a carbon-based economy to what's next, that we're still going to have to bring on new oil. I mean, I would offer to people that natural gas is a great transition. Natural gas is a bridge between burning oil for electrical utilities, using oil and carbon-based energy. Natural gas is a perfect solution. We've got lots of it. We need to bring it to market.
Joe Miller.
In the years that I worked on the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline valuation case, one of the things we learned was that a significant component of cost of any major capital project involves regulatory burdens. They are significant. In fact, in many projects, a significant percentage of the cost in such a way that it causes these projects that may not be cost-effective otherwise to not go forward because of the regulatory cost. And so we have to, at the federal level, do a number of things, including reducing the regulatory burden, also ensuring that when we're dealing with public interest litigation, the non-governmental organizations that file lawsuits, simply to slow projects, that we do something at the federal level to limit those lawsuits, to ensure that those that do file those lawsuits incur the cost of it. But certainly the federal government, where it can offer loan guarantees, should. I believe that the natural gas gas line in this state, critical to the future of the state, especially as oil continues to decrease as it's going down the Trans-Alaskan pipeline. But we also have to look at other various resource-based opportunities that this state has as well, all of which involve, again, reducing the role of the regulatory burden from the federal government on these projects.
Senator Murkowski.
Not only do I support the loan guarantees, I have worked to advance them. In the 2004 Natural Gas Pipeline Act, which was my legislation, it put in place those initial loan guarantees of $18 billion at the time, anticipating that that's what we would need. Of course, since that point in time, the cost of this project has gone up, and it was in legislation that we advanced out of the Energy Committee just last year that would beef up that loan guarantee to $30 billion. Also included in that legislation was an effort to allow for financing through the Federal Financing Bank, which would allow for an opportunity to bring down those financing costs. Anything that we can do to help the cost of this project, which we recognize is extraordinary, we need to do so. I made sure that we put language in both acts, both in 09 and in 04, to make sure that the project would be route neutral. So we've worked to getting the right-of-ways in place. So we've put in place at the federal level what we need to. Now we have to make it happen at the state level.
All right, now a chance for each candidate to rebut either or both of your opponents. Scott McAdams first.
No rebuttal.
Joe Miller.
I would just simply note that when we talk about cap and trade legislation and carbon taxes, that it's very critical that we acknowledge that the gas that's coming off the North Slope is high carbon gas. And so anytime that we talk about taxing that, first of all, I think that you got to do what I regard as a cost-benefit analysis. Even if you think that the carbon tax is a way to affect climate change, the fact of it is we've got to assess as to whether or not that does more damage to people or good. And we know that a carbon tax with respect to the gas line is something that's going to do great harm to it. And we need, I think, as Alaskans to really fight that and ensure that we don't add to the energy costs each one of us incur.
Senator Murkowski.
Well, I will follow up on that because I think there has been a mischaracterization of my position on a cap and trade bill. It's been suggested that somehow or other I have voted for one. We haven't had a vote before the United States Senate on cap and trade, and if we were to do so, I could not support it because not only the economic impact to our nation, but what it would do more specifically to us as a state, whether it's a natural gas pipeline that we're trying to advance, how we ensure that our oil pipeline remains in place and effective, what it does to our refineries, the three that we have in the state, what it does to our fish processors, what it does to this building. I think we recognize that a carbon tax proposal such as Kerry and Lieberman have advanced or the Waxman-Markey proposal that came out of the House would be devastating for this state, for this nation, and I simply do not support them.
All right, now we're going to have a lightning round of questions. Each candidate gets 5 seconds to answer, hopefully with one word. Lisa?
Good luck on that.
We have Alex here at the bell, just in case.
Okay.
Winston Churchill once said that all great things are simple, and many can be expressed in a single word, such as freedom, justice, honor, duty. What is the one-word description of what you are fighting for in this election? Scott McAdams.
I'm fighting for Alaska's fair share, equity.
Liberty.
Senator McCaskill.
Freedom.
Second question. What percentage of your family income do you devote to charity? Scott McAdams.
What percentage of my probably about 1 to 2%.
Okay. 15 to 20.
I'd say 5.
Thank you.
And now for our next question. It's widely reported that China is seeking access to and control of minerals and natural resources around the world. Some worry that China will gain too much influence over American interest in this way. Alaska needs investments, including foreign investments, to add jobs and business. Should we welcome investment in Alaska by a rising China? Senator Murkowski.
I think as a state, we need to look at all opportunities that we have. But I think we need to kind of put this into perspective. You lead with a question that's somewhat interesting, because right now what is happening is China, who holds about 95% of the rare earth elements, elements that are necessary for our computers, for our wind turbines, for our BlackBerries, just about everything that we see has some of these rare earth elements in them. China is using these as a trade weapon. They've basically cut off supplies of rare earths to Japan. This was a couple weeks ago. And then just last week, they have started to clamp down on the rare earth elements that come into the United States. We've got an opportunity here in Alaska, actually down on Prince of Wales Island, an incredible opportunity to enter into a brand new industry and kind of reclaim ownership of an issue to avoid getting into this trade bartering with a nation like China.
Thank you. Scott McAdams.
Well, as far as foreign investment into Alaska's infrastructure, whether it be in oil and mineral development, I would agree that we do need to take a look at all investors and have equity in the marketplace for investors, whether they be domestic or foreign. Of course, any natural resource development that is done in Alaska uses the highest standards of development in the world. I think where I would differ from China's behavior, particularly internally, is China employs very low standards for their own development in their own country of their natural resources. Like anyone who would invest in our state would have to bring that investment with the promise of using the highest standards for development on the planet.
And Joe Miller.
We have a volunteer on our campaign that recently went to the Shanghai Expo and saw just the extraordinary development that's going on in China right now. He came back quite concerned because he does not see the same sort of development occurring in this country. The main concern is that from his perspective, you have a Chinese government, which is communistic, yet has more capitalistic, from his perspective again, freedoms and free enterprise than we have. What we've got right now is a country that is overburdened by regulation, and it's not just environmental regulation, but it's also regulation in the sense of, well, the Small Business Administration, for example, several weeks ago issued a memorandum that suggested that for each employee in a small business, there's $9,000 of regulatory cost. You know, when you sit down and you try to start a business, the onerous burden of regulation is such that it is not able to move forward at a pace that other businesses throughout the world can. Really what's going on here is we are squelching free enterprise. We shouldn't turn away investment. We shouldn't turn away trading partners. What we need to do here in the country is fix the problem that is causing us not to be competitive, fix the problem that is creating the huge trade deficits that we have today.
And now for a 1 minute rebuttal, Senator Murkowski.
I was just kind of jotting down some thoughts here in terms of who we have as participants in our state right now and where do they come from. Think about our oil and our oil industry. We've got British Petroleum, BP. We have so many. We've got ENI. We've got, looking at our gas line proposal, of course, is TransCanada. Within our minerals sector, we've got Rio Tinto. Within the timber industry, that helped build out our state in the southeastern part of the state. It was the Japanese who held interest there and investments in our state. So when you think about the investments that we have received as a state from other countries to help build up our industries, I think it's important to recognize that it hasn't just been us. We are participants in a global society.
Thank you. Scott McAdams.
Well, I would add that, again, Alaska is a natural resource state. We do need better access to our natural resources. It's really what's next in our economy. As we take a look at Prudhoe Bay, Prudhoe Bay is the golden goose that's entering its golden years. And so it's important we have a conversation right now about what is next for our state. Even by the time this Senate term ends, I don't think we have a clear picture of what is next. But the case I'll make in the United States Senate, whether it be with foreign investors who want to invest in infrastructure, and as well as to others who might want to lock up Alaska, is that, you know, when we develop in Alaska, we use the highest standards in the world. When we don't develop in Alaska, we export environmental degradation to places like China, to third world nations, to developing nations that don't have any governance tradition in enforcing environmental law and don't have any labor tradition that allows working people to share in the wealth of the extraction. When we do it in Alaska, we do it using the highest standards in the world.
Thank you.
Again, the focus has got to be looking at the resource base to create jobs. We've got to do that because we know that the federal dollars that have come into the state in the past aren't going to continue in the future because the federal government is nearing bankruptcy. But if you look at the resource base that we have in the state of statehood, there was this concept we'd be able to support ourselves independently, create our own economic stature by the resources that are here. And we've done good. I mean, you look at, for example, the North Slope and the oil production, but not good enough. I mean, you look at the major projects that have come online over time, we need to have more. We literally have hundreds of years of coal here within Alaska. There's huge demand for that. In fact, one statistic I heard, China's building a coal plant every day, something like that. Obviously, we don't want to contribute to worldwide environmental problems, but then again, we have an ability to export things, to put jobs on the ground, and put food on the table here in Alaska. And we need to take opportunity, like Beluga Coal, to move forward those projects that can bring long-term jobs to Alaska. And it's not the foreign investment's bad. I mean, you look at the North Slope, of course, major producers up there, foreign owned, at least by a large percentage. So it's an issue of making sure that Alaska gets what it's supposed to under royalty, under lease agreements, and making sure we put Alaskan jobs on the line.
All right, time for the next lightning round. Candidates, if you could not live in the United States, what country would be your next choice? Lisa Murkowski.
I've never been to Iceland, but I'm intrigued because they have figured out how to use their geothermal, and I like that. So I think Iceland.
Scott McAdams.
If I could not live in the United States, I'd still want to live in the United States. But I'll say Canada.
No second choice. Yeah. Joe Miller.
I'd live on a boat.
Huh? Okay.
What is the first U.S. Senate committee assignment you want, Senator Murkowski?
I want to chair the Energy Committee.
Is this lightning round?
Lightning round.
Scott McAdams.
Energy Committee.
Joe Miller.
Depends on the outcome of November 2nd.
All right, let's go to question number three. The first question, we'll go to Joe Miller first here. The question is, Ted Stevens was known in the United States Senate as the King of Pork. Year after year, he unabashedly and proudly brought federal funds to Alaska for infrastructure, education, cultural facilities, healthcare, telecommunications, military installations, and lots more. Looking to the future as well as the present, was Senator Stevens right or wrong to maximize federal funds to Alaska, and why?
Each one of us here in this room can attribute part of our wealth to Ted Stevens, or lack thereof. I mean, frankly, the benefits and the deficits that have been created by past practices. This is a state that absolutely has young infrastructure. We were right to demand contributions to that. But the point is, and even Senator Stevens recognized this at the Lincoln Day dinner earlier this year, that things have got to change. The deficit has reached a point where we're on the verge of hitting the same catastrophe that Greece had, the same catastrophe that right now Great Britain is experiencing. If you translate what happened to Great Britain this past week to the United States, you're looking at, first of all, almost $650 billion off of our budget, just out the door. If you look at the public employees that Great Britain looks like they're laying off, 450,000, translate that to the United States, you're talking millions. The fact of the matter is that we've got to go a different direction. Ted Stevens was a fighter, and you've got to put a fighter in office to fight in a different direction. This time, a fight for our natural resource base so we can create those jobs independent of the federal government here so that your generation and future generations have jobs even when those federal dollars shrink, as they most certainly will.
Senator Murkowski.
Well, first of all, I have to take objection to how you began your statement. You called, and it was probably somebody else's statement, Steve, but you called Ted Stevens the king of pork. And I absolutely disagree with that. Any of you that think that the Port of Anchorage is pork, any of you that think the Denali Commission that builds out infrastructure in our most economically deprived areas, if you think that the Denali Commission is pork, if you think that the basic infrastructure that we have been trying to build out, whether it's to reduce our energy costs or to connect our communities or to provide for communications in today's day and age, if you think that is pork, then that is just flat out wrong, and I'll argue with any single one of you. We are building out our state. Ted Stevens laid the groundwork. He spent 40 years of public service building out that state. It is not pork. It's investing in Alaska. It's investing in America.
Scott McAdams.
Thank you. Well, there's no question that the baseline of any economy is affordable energy, reliable transportation, functioning public works infrastructure, and an educated populace. In so many parts of Alaska, in so many parts of rural Alaska, as a young state, as an infrastructure poor state, we have a case to be made before a national audience as a matter of equal footing, that we should be developed and invested with the help of Washington, D.C. The invisible hand of the free market has seldom ever provided for these things. They never have and they never will. Now, Joe has signed a pledge and made a vow to not request any appropriation or vote on any appropriation, not part of the president's regularly introduced budget. He's also made the same pledge and vow to not request any appropriation or vote on any appropriation made by a local, and I emphasize local, or special interest. On the other hand, Senator Murkowski has voted against 89 projects in the last year alone. Over 11 appropriations bills in her committee on appropriations that included $400 million in projects for Alaska. I didn't think those projects were pork either. I would have voted yes on those appropriations bills.
All right. Rebuttal, a chance for each candidate to rebut the other two, or one of the other two. Joe Miller?
Whether pork or not, times have changed. Whether pork or not, we know we're facing bankruptcy. So what do we do as a state? Do we invest the fight in a direction that we know the era is ending on, that being earmarks or pork, however you want to describe it? Or do we fight as hard as we can in a different direction, and that is to open up the resource base that we really have been relatively unsuccessful in doing in a broad sense across Alaska? When you look at today, the rural communities, and you ask, are they better today than they were yesterday? And the fact of the matter is, they're quite similar to what they were yesterday. Why is that? Because the resource base, which is located in rural Alaska, has not been developed to the extent that it could be. The infrastructure and the opportunities that we can bring throughout Alaska are extraordinary. If we put the effort in the fight in that direction, and we combine with these people that are being elected in the lower 48 that see the future of this nation as enhanced states' rights, more control over our resource base, we can do extraordinary things in this state. And this state has extraordinary opportunity given the incredible wealth that sits beneath our feet.
Senator Murkowski.
Well, I'm a little confused here, Joe, because you've stated, and I just wrote it down here, that our resource base hasn't been developed in our rural areas as it should be. That's part of the problem. That's what Ted Stevens started out to do. That's what I've been trying to do. But when you don't have basic infrastructure, when you don't have water and sewer, when you don't have affordable energy, when you're paying 40 cents a kilowatt hour, how do you build out anything when you're operating off of diesel? So what we're trying to do is we're trying to facilitate affordable energy solutions out in rural Alaska. We're trying to facilitate some transportation connectors so that we don't have to airdrop in everything that goes out there. How are you going to develop an area like Donlin if you don't have affordable energy solutions, if you don't have some way to provide for the transportation? So to just suggest that all we need to do is develop our resource base and we don't need those federal dollars. We're still trying to build out a part of the country that hasn't yet been touched by the heavy hand of that. It's not the heavy hand of the federal dollar, but what everybody else in the lower 48 has already received and what we have yet to receive.
Scott McAdams.
Thank you, and I agree that there is still a case to be made before a national audience that Alaska ought be developed as a matter of equal footing. Look, when you look at the history of the American West, there's no question that there was a time in this country when the Transcontinental Railroad was a railroad to nowhere, when the Hoover Dam was a dam for no one. But it's hard to imagine the development and prosperity of the American West without the assistance of the East Coast and Washington, D.C. Now, Senator Murkowski, I also believe that we need to champion federal spending and federal dollars in Alaska. What I don't understand is how you can take that position when you voted against legislation in Washington, D.C. that included the $200 million Nome Hospital, that included projects to improve our infrastructure, including the Port of Anchorage, the Alaska Railroad, hydroelectric capacity in Southeast Alaska. You know, when you say no to bills in your own state, projects in your own state, and tell the chairman that he's spending too much money, the chairman's going to cut out of your state during the next budget. So it's inconsistent. In Alaska, in communities, we recognize that no means no, and Lisa, you voted no.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with the candidates running for United States Senator in Alaska's general election on November 2nd. Hosted by the Rotary Clubs of Anchorage and the Alaska World Affairs Council, the debate was recorded at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage on Tuesday, October 26th.
Now we're ready for our next round of lightning questions, so you have 5 seconds for a quick response. Which of your opponents would you rather go fishing with? Joe Miller.
Scott McAdams.
Senator Murkowski.
Scott's from Southeast. He knows where the fish are.
Scott.
Scott McAdams. Oh, I'm sorry. I'd go fishing with either Lisa or Joe.
Oh, come on.
More than
all right,
five.
Let's up the ante a little bit here. Second round. Which of your opponents would you rather be in a foxhole with?
Who starts?
Joe Miller first.
That's me?
Yep.
And a foxhole. Well, you know, I'm kind of one of those combat arms guys that believe. Oh, Scott McAdams, he's a guy.
Well, I would ordinarily say Joe, but after the last debate, I'm thinking Lisa Murkowski.
Senator Murkowski.
I have to imagine that Joe's a pretty good shot.
Okay, our next question. If you were unemployed today, what would you want your federal government to do? Joe Miller.
Is this lightning round?
No.
You have 1 minute.
You know, I'm glad that you brought up this issue because it's one that obviously is important to many of us here, especially those that have temporary jobs, that have seasonal jobs. Unemployment, I believe, is properly administered by the state. That's what happens right now, but it's under federal mandates. It's my perspective that the best way to go about many of these programs is you continue with the state administration of the program. That doesn't mean that you turn away the federal dollars, but you allow the state to make the decision as to what best fits those within the state. You know, we don't face the same situations that other states face. We may have higher unemployment. We may have more extended unemployment. We may have more seasonal workers. And so for the state of Alaska, it's better for us to make the decision as to how that program works. And again, that doesn't mean turning away the funds. But what it does mean is the state is in the driver's seat. It's able to create the solutions that are more accountable to the people, that are more responsive. And it doesn't then follow the one-size-fits-all that doesn't always fit all of the states, particularly when you've got states like Michigan that may be hitting 20% unemployment, whereas in the state of Alaska, we're at, I think, 7.8 now. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski.
Well, I think Joe, what you have said there is that you do not think any longer that unemployment compensation is not constitutional. So I'm glad to hear that. You asked the question about if I were unemployed and I were taking advantage of that safety net, what would I want my government to do? I'd want to know that they are actively working to help create and foster jobs and job creation so that I could get a job. I don't think that just necessarily spending stimulus dollars, getting money out on the street is the answer. That $787 billion promise didn't create the jobs. What we need to put in place are our stable tax policies. Right now, one of the reasons that you're not seeing a lot of businesses expand to take on new employees is they don't know what we're going to do with the 2001-03 tax cuts. Are we going to see taxes raised in January? So as an employer, you don't know, so you can't make that investment. I want the government to help us make sure that there's a stable environment out there so that jobs are created, so that I can go back to work.
And Scott McAdams.
Thank you. I'll answer this question this way. I was raised by a single mom. There were times in my childhood when unemployment was a factor in our lives, where poverty took root in our home. I, by the grace of God, have always been able to find a job. But I tell you, in Washington, D.C., as a matter of policy and budget priority, I'll continue to support programs that help transition people from unemployment to full employment. One of the great salvations of my life and one of my great passions is public education. I think there is no better social program available to us as Americans to make sure that our people have the assets that they need to be employable, but also to be happy, to be healthy, to be safe. I'll continue to support programs like unemployment insurance. I believe that unemployment insurance does fall within the purview of the Constitution. That's a joke, Joe. You're welcome. I think it's important we have folks who have real life experiences in Washington, D.C., who recognize that sometimes folks need help.
And now is your chance for a 1 minute rebuttal. Joe Miller.
I, like Scott, my family has faced hard times as well. I will tell you again, though, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the state closer to the problem, more accountable to you, or would you rather have the federal government with its bureaucrats in D.C. thousands of miles away making a decision that is best for Alaska? 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be best for Alaska. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a decision that does not fit Alaska. No Child Left Behind is a good example on the education front. And so the same way with these other programs. I think our founders had it right. They knew the reason that the states ought to be more in the driver's seat on these issues. Greater accountability, close proximity to the problem, and understanding. And that's the point that we've made. It's unfortunate that the dialogue has become a question as to whether or not it's yes or no on these things. It's not a yes or no question. It's a question as to who should best have the power and control over the money and the programs. And it's our position that it ought to be at the state level. The state level has worked more effectively in the past. And with a bankrupt federal government, it's an answer that we ought to be increasingly looking toward. That doesn't mean tomorrow, but that is a process and a debate that needs to get underway given where D.C. has taken us.
Senator Murkowski.
I think it's also important to recognize that with all of these, whether it's unemployment or whether it's Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the answer that you have given, Joe, is it needs to be shifted from the federal to the state. The question is whether or not the state is going to take that over and those expenses that then come with it. We already know what we're going to see when it comes to the dramatic, dramatic increases at the state level when it comes to Medicaid. Going back to the original question, though, in terms of what would you want if you were unemployed, I'd want to make sure that there would be training opportunities for me. If I need to switch to another field, I would hope that we have those training programs to help retool an individual. I would hope that we would have the educational programs to help that individual rather than, again, throwing stimulus dollars at a situation. Let's give folks the tools that they need to be more resilient.
Scott McAdams.
Could you repeat the question? Are we in
rebuttal?
Thank you. I think that it is important that we have top-notch training programs. I think when we talk about the $1.6 billion that came to the state of Alaska, through the ERA bill, also known as the stimulus. It's important for folks to remember and keep in mind that there was $174 million spread across 74 grants that went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks that Senator Murkowski voted no on, that would have provided for much needed programs to diversify our economy, to build that stable baseline for Alaskans, for folks to transition from a job, an underemployment situation, to a reaching their full potential. I mean, investing in Alaska is critically important. Education is a big part of that investment.
All right, we're ready for another lightning round. 5 seconds to answer this one. Do you believe Social Security will still be around and on a sound financial footing when the students in our audience today are ready to retire? Joe Miller.
No.
Lisa Murkowski.
That is my goal.
Scott McAdams.
Yes.
Will a government-run social safety net still be needed at that time? Joe.
Hopefully not.
Senator Murkowski.
Hopefully not.
Scott McAdams.
In Scripture, it says that the poor will always be amongst us. Yes, there will be a need.
All right. The next question to all the candidates is first to Scott McAdams. The question is this: where do you draw the boundary between personal privacy and the public's right to know about a candidate for the United States Senate? How much does a candidate's experience and past performance tell us about their character, ethics, and abilities, and what is a fair expectation by the citizens?
Well, thank you for the question. I think that past performance is the best indicator of future performance, and it is important that folks have an opportunity to take a look at who's running for office and try to anticipate how they might behave and react to situations once they sit in the seat. I think what's unfortunate about this particular race in this campaign is so much of the attention that's been paid to it has been about drama. I would have preferred that we actually talk about issues, that we stay focused on issues, because I tell you what, the time is now, in 2010, to begin a great conversation about what's next for Alaska. We can't, every time we talk about, you know, somebody's personnel file or somebody else's such and such, I mean, to a certain extent, there is an opportunity cost there where we're not talking about how in the heck are we going to put Alaskans to work. So, look, I have a service record of 8 years serving in the local community. Cityofsitka.com, I encourage anybody to look at the minutes over the last 2 years or the Sitka School District over the last 8. I do have a record to run on.
Joe Miller.
Well, I guess if you would have asked me that question several months ago, I might have a different answer. From the beginning of the campaign, made a commitment to be transparent, and in fact, put on our campaign website virtually every document that has anything to do with my past. And then the Fairbanks North Star Borough event arose. And I don't think ever in the history of American jurisprudence we've seen a personnel file released that includes medical records, et cetera. We made a decision today, by the way, even though we think that decision was wrong, to release those records. And there's warts and all in it. I'll tell you that straight up. We talked a little bit about that before, but what's very unfortunate about where we're at today, this country is at a crisis point. That's why I got involved in the race. I mean, I knew over the course of time that I'd made some bad decisions and good decisions. I knew I made some enemies and some friends, and I knew that those would probably come to the fore, but I did not know that they'd be used in a way to cheat from the Alaskan voter the opportunity to address the values and the issues that are before you right now, and that is a state dependent on the federal dollar, and yet the federal government is going bankrupt. What are we going to do for our children?
Senator Murkowski.
This is a job interview. When you've got a prospective employee coming to you, they give you their resume. And you look at that, you don't know who they are. You look at that and you ask them questions about their resume. And when there is a gap on that resume that says, well, you weren't doing anything for the past 7 years, or it's not noted on your resume, it's a legitimate question to say. So, what went on then? It's also legitimate to call references. This is part of the process. So, all of us sitting before you who are asking for your support, your personal endorsement for our candidacy, we've got an obligation to basically tell you all. And so it's based on past performance, it's based on a voting record, it's based on your resume, it's based on where you worked and what you have done within your community. That is all fair game. When you file for office, you got to file a financial disclosure form, and you got to do it right then, not 5 months later.
Okay. 1 minute for a rebuttal. Scott McAdams?
I would agree with the senator that this is a job interview. And the senator mentioned that there is a record that needs to be examined. I'd ask everyone in this audience, everyone who's watching streaming online, to take a look at lisavotes.com and take a look at the actual record of this of the senator and her performance as it relates in particular to projects in Alaska. I mean, it is insider DC double talk, in my point of view, to talk about how you championed a appropriation. You know, I've been a mayor. I've also been a state leader in school governance. I've been to Washington, D.C. 12 times over the last 8 years, asking our delegation for better schools and better school policy, for roads, ports, harbors, hydroelectric expansion, move forward a $40 million capital list before a national audience on behalf of my community. To say that, to take those requests from mayors, sometimes mayors of all different sorts, to put them into a bill and then to vote no on that bill, only to have the bill pass and then to come back and cut the ribbon. In small town Alaska, in all of our communities in Alaska, that just doesn't make sense.
Joe Miller.
I'd say if the shoe fits, wear it. If you're so interested in my past, let's see full disclosure from each of my other candidates. Let's see their personnel files. Let's see their past performance in school. Let's see everything. I've showed you all of mine. Let's see theirs. That's part of it, okay? Now, the second thing that I'll make, second point that I'll make, and this is the reason why I made that point while we're at the debate yesterday, a couple of days ago, Senator, is that that same level of scrutiny was not applied at the time that you were appointed by your dad in 2002. It was not. And in fact, that was not a job application, that was an appointment. But that being as it may, I will also tell you that we ran one race already this season on the issues. That was called a primary. You lost that job interview. Now we're running on personal issues and you're trying to win by, again, taking the voter away from the issue that's before us here in Alaska. And that is making certain that we are prepared for the coming hard times. You can try to buy the Alaskan voters' vote. You can try to create all sorts of cloudy areas with respect to whether or not they have the right decisions before them. But the fact of the matter is, if we don't act now, this state is in for serious hard times.
Senator Murkowski.
Disclosure is a public official's responsibility. We've got to be accurate with it, we've got to be complete with it, and we've got to be timely with it. That's what you basically sign up for. You give up some of your personal space. You give up some of what you would say is your own personal business. That's just not the way it works. And if you don't like it, then don't do it. Don't run. You know, you have conveniently omitted the fact, Joe, that I stood for full election back in 2004 against a very popular two-term former governor and won with about 10,000 votes. So when you suggest that somehow or other I have not been vetted through this process, it has been about a full six-year vetting process now in addition to the full public record that I have before Alaskans.
Thank you. And now we'll do our next round of lightning questions. Do you have a current valid U.S. passport? Scott McAdams.
Yes.
Joe Miller.
Yes.
Senator Murkowski.
Yes.
The next follow-up is, have you used it to travel abroad in the last 5 years?
Yes.
Yes, Philippines.
Yes.
Okay, and our next question. As our country's next step in world affairs, would you rely more on greater military strength, the hard power, or increase soft power, such as foreign aid, education, or diplomacy? Senator Murkowski.
Soft power.
You have 1 minute to answer.
Okay, so this is not, I thought this was a lightning round, but I'm glad that we've got full time to speak to it. I believe that our efforts worldwide need to be advanced in a more aggressive and truly a more persuasive manner when it comes to our public diplomacy. And you think about the situation in Afghanistan, a very difficult situation where we're seeing increasing numbers of losses, the violence there, it makes you wonder if we're making any progress. And yet you think about the efforts that have been made in that country, in difficult areas, but the efforts that we make when it comes to the education of the Afghan people. What more can we be doing throughout the world when we use our public diplomacy, when we work to educate women, when we work to provide for a level of understanding and compassion and tolerance? This, I hope, is our future.
Thank you. Scott McAdams.
Thank you. I think that to answer the question, there are situations where either needs to be the option available to us. I mean, certainly it is our tradition, it's our best tradition in this country, that we begin with diplomacy. We are a humane and just people. And with the exception of the last administration and a new doctrine of preemptive war, that has always been our tradition in this country. Here's what my commitment to Alaskans and to voters is that, you know, before I vote to appropriate a dollar to a foreign conflict, I will be dogged with the administration to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what our mission is, what our purpose is, that we have a strategy that will succeed, and that we have a clear definition of what success looks like. Because we went in Afghanistan from a doctrine of counterterrorism to one of counterinsurgency now, where before we had a very light presence in Afghanistan and we were picking off terrorists. Now we're there nation building because we've inherited the problem. I'll make sure that we have a clear definition of success when I'm United States Senator.
Joe Miller.
As a combat vet that has seen warfare and seen the best and worst in humankind, I can tell you that diplomacy, Scott, you're right. It ought to be the first option. But I also have to tell you that with what we have right now as far as the deficit goes, we can't go around the world building nations, creating democracies, basically influencing countries in a way that we think fits best with our ideal of what government is. We are spread thin. And what that means is, given the hostile world in which we live, we've got to be focused on those means by which we can defend ourselves. And the hard truth of it is, it's not just the fiscal insanity that has been cast upon us by 8 years of insider politics that's doubled the national deficit from $6 trillion to $13.5 trillion. But during the same time frame, we have countries like Iran that are actively developing weapons of mass destruction. A president, Ahmadinejad, who wants to do harm not just to Israel, but to ourselves. And yet we're caught up in two wars. Obviously, have to support our troops on the ground once they're committed. But we've got to rethink the way that we're going about foreign policy and recognize that terrorism, with respect to weapons of mass destruction, is an extreme problem that we have to deal with. We've got to be laser-focused in our approach and make sure that our priorities are right so that we can do more with the limited resources we have.
And for a rebuttal, Senator Murkowski.
I think when we discuss the pros and cons of military action as opposed to how else we might engage, I think it's important to recognize that we are an all-volunteer force. And we have been engaged in war in Iraq. We are now engaged in war in Afghanistan. And we are seeing our men and our women that are serving us going through repeated deployment. 3 and 4 and 5 deployments. And what it does to those who are serving us, not just the physical toll, but the mental toll, and what it does to their families who are here, knowing that a child might not see her dad for 3 birthdays in a row, we cannot sustain this as a nation. When we ask too much, and believe me, our military can give and give and give, but we cannot break them.
Scott McAdams.
Well, thank you. And I would agree that, today's military, our servicemen and women, aren't just expected to be soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors. They're expected to be diplomats. They're expected to be community builders. They're expected to go and have tea with tribal chieftains to build goodwill and a positive regard towards American mission in places like Afghanistan. I would agree that we can't afford to be engaged in a state of endless war. We cannot afford the investment in either human blood or national treasury to continue to go in and nation build. And so, again, I'll make sure that we've got a clear purpose, a clear mission, that the nation's national interests really are threatened before I ever vote to appropriate $1 for a foreign engagement.
Joe Miller.
None of the candidates know better than I about what deployment means. I was deployed for 6 months during Desert Storm, and despite my opponent's desire to tear down my military record as well, which is fairly extraordinary given my service, given the fact that my service records are clearly on my website, it just amazes me that there can be attacks at every corner, even on the service that so many of us here in Alaska share together. We've got the highest veteran population in the nation per capita. Nobody knows better than Alaskans as to what endless deployments mean. And I got to tell you that Congress bears responsibility when we get embroiled in these battles that end up taking years and hundreds of billions of dollars when they really are not accomplishing what is required under the Constitution, that is, making sure that we accomplish the common defense. Congress has got to take responsibility, not just with respect to the ballooning national deficit, but also with respect to the foreign policy decisions that cause our men and women in uniform to end up having these family problems, these endless deployments, and it really effectively causes them to be more of Peace Corps members than military men and women that have joined to defend their country. And so we've got to take control over that. We've got to make sure Congress takes a leading role, and that's my commitment to you if you honor me with my vote, with your vote on November 2nd.
All right, now we have probably the most important test of character of all is this lightning round. One question only. Who do you like in the World Series, the Texas Rangers or the San Francisco Giants?
San Francisco Giants.
The Rangers.
Rangers.
All right. Now we have a thank you to the candidates.
I just got the National League vote. I'm
might work out. Good bullpen there.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with the candidates running for United States Senator in Alaska's general election on November 2nd. The Rotary Clubs of Anchorage and the Alaska World Affairs Council hosted Democrat Scott McAdams, Republican Joe Miller, and write-in candidate Lisa Murkowski at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage on Tuesday, October 26th. In the last third of the program, the candidates fielded questions from students at West High School in Anchorage. As members of the We the People program, the students asked questions focused on the United States Constitution.
Now we have a special part of our program today. The students from West Anchorage High School in the We the People program. We have four students, each of whom will ask three questions in order to the candidates. And the first one is?
We'll have Sydney ask her first question of Joe Miller. You have 1 minute to answer.
Civic virtue is putting the common good before individual interests. Is it the government's responsibility to encourage civic virtue?
It's the government's responsibility to follow the Constitution. And at the base of it are individual rights. The Bill of Rights encapsulates those. Our founders saw that they were given to us by something called natural law. It's a God-given liberty that we have. Government is restrained so that those liberties are protected. That's why a theme of our campaign is restoring liberty. Because as the government continues to grow, power is a zero-sum game. And it takes away from the individual. Certainly, we want to see individuals bind together to form the community that is necessary to move this nation forward. But at the base of it is the individual joining together hand in hand to move the community forward.
Nathaniel has a question for Senator Murkowski.
Senator, is there an area in which you believe the federal government should never interfere?
I don't believe that the federal government should interfere in those very personal aspects of our life. And I hesitated there because we know that in some very personal aspects, the federal government has intervened. And so the question that must be asked is there then an appropriate role? Where do you draw that line? Where do you find that distinction? I think it is fair to look back to the original confines, the context of the Constitution, to determine where that may lie. We have here in the state of Alaska, it's been interpreted that we have greater rights to privacy under our state constitution than are provided under the federal constitution, the U.S. Constitution. But it is a fine line where when we make that distinction as to how do you determine where that privacy is as an individual.
Caitlin now has a question for Scott McAdams.
Do you believe the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment should apply to Guantanamo Bay detainees?
Thank you. I do believe in basic human rights. I believe that when you take a look at how we as Americans ought treat our prisoners of foreign wars, how we as Americans treat other human beings on the planet, I believe that there is such a thing as basic human rights. Under our current system, of course, the liberties and protections afforded by the United States Constitution, by our public laws, apply to United States citizens. But again, I think that there is basic civility. I don't necessarily agree that the pursuit of terrorism is necessarily a law enforcement matter. I think there are instances when a different set of criteria that apply to the rules of engagement in war actually apply to the pursuit of terrorists across the planet.
Elisha has a question for Joe Miller.
Do you believe the increased partisanship within Congress is detrimental to our system of government? If so, how will you go about changing this trend?
I think the key is making sure that people on both sides of the aisle recognize where we're at as a nation. And I think that will drive cooperation to reducing the role of the federal government. You know, the concept that I'm running as some right-wing Republican, of course, is not accurate. This is really a states' rights plank, where we look at how do we get from point A, which is a bankrupt federal government, to point B, which is increased jobs and free enterprise across the United States. And the key is to move the debate back to the states in a way that at the state level, you know, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, you know, whether you're somebody that likes a bigger role of government or not, you can exercise that decision at the state level, where at least there's fiscal sanity, where at least you've got money that is in the coffers, and where at least you've got accountability with the people that are here. And so the question is whether or not we're going to have people that are realistic enough to address it. I think what we see going on in the United States today is an incredible move in the right direction. You know, the Tea Party, for example, some calculations show that a quarter, Scott, of the Tea Party is Democrat, for real. Despite the fact that people don't recognize it, it's a broad bipartisan move toward reforming government and getting government back in the right direction it needs to be. Restrained at the federal level, more rights at the state.
Thank you. Now, Sydney has a question for Scott McAdams.
What is your opinion about the current freedom of speech case, Snyder v. Phelps, which involves the grieving father of a Marine killed in Iraq who sued the Westboro Baptist Church?
Thank you. For those who may not be familiar with this legislation, it is the Supreme Court case. It's the one in which profanity signs regarding homosexuality are moved forward by a church from Kansas at its funerals of service people. I mean, this is some of the most egregious free speech that I can think of. It's some of the most distasteful and inappropriate free speech that I can even imagine. But you know, one of the things about our inalienable rights and about our civil liberties is that the standards that we use apply to even the most disgusting, in my point of view, expressions of speech that a person might demonstrate. Now, this particular case, I think that there are certain elements of the practices of the church that may actually be a civil disobedience realm that actually is something that might be prohibited in need of a permit. But again, I'm a supporter of free speech.
Nathaniel has a question for Senator Murkowski.
Do you believe that the Constitution is a living document?
I do believe it is a living document, and I believe that the founding fathers recognized that with Article 5 of the Constitution, which allows and provides for amending the Constitution. If they did not think that there was going to be something that they could not predict, something that they could not forecast, they would not have included that in the articles. I think it makes it very clear and recognizes that as brilliant as they were and as much as they had thought they had built a document that would be lasting, that there were situations that they could not anticipate, and it was reflected then with Article 5, which allows for amendment of the Constitution.
Now, Caitlin has a question for Joe Miller.
Marbury versus Madison in 1803 established judicial review over Congress. Do you support judicial review, even though it is not explicitly mentioned in the Constitution?
You know, I don't mind judicial review as long as you don't have an activist judge doing it. When you've got judges that are out there looking at the Constitution as a living, breathing document, not one that's subject to a black and white amendment process, but one by which the courts can come in and say, I don't care what the founders intended. I'm going to take this principle in the Constitution and make it fit what I wanted to say. What you've done is you've reduced the Republic to basically the tyranny of those in the black robes. There has got to be a baseline, and that baseline has got to be, what did the founders intend with the Constitution? And if you want it changed, then go through the amendment process. There's a process for it. I think there are a couple of great ones out there that are pending right now or that have been introduced. The 28th Amendment, for example, designed to ensure that Congress cannot pass out any law that doesn't apply to themselves. Or perhaps the term limit proposal that would limit the Senate to 2 terms, the House to 6. Those are some fantastic options that we have out there, but there's a process. It's not some activist judge out there saying that, well, I think this is best, even though the founders didn't intend it. But it's the people deciding as a whole that we should go a different direction and then ratify that amendment appropriately.
Elisha with a question for Scott McAdams.
Article 1 gives Congress the sole power to declare war, yet presidents have deployed troops without the assent of Congress over 200 times. Has Congress relinquished its constitutional power to declare war? If so, how should it be reclaimed?
Thank you. I would agree, starting back even to the midpoint of the 20th century, there has been a huge expansion of the executive branch as it relates to deploying our troops abroad. And I do think there have been circumstances where there has not been a formal declaration of war, where there probably ought have been one. But I do think that we do, in a world where things move fast, in a world where rapid response is often needed, I think it is important that we do endow our Commander-in-Chief with the flexibility to be able to engage if needed. And so I think it's a delicate balance between the executive and between the legislative branch. Of course, what the Senate and what the Congress does have available at its disposal is the appropriating process. And again, as I stated before, I will not vote to appropriate a single dollar to a mission I don't believe is warranted.
And now Sydney will ask a question of Senator Murkowski.
What is your opinion about the use of the filibuster in the Senate to block presidential appointments?
I happen to believe that particularly when it comes to the process that allows for confirmation of judges, that use of the filibuster has been abused. Now, the filibuster rule has been around in the Senate for a long time, but we have not seen, except in recent years and in recent Congresses, where there have been efforts to block the ability to even bring that judge up for an up or down vote. I believe that we need to look internally within the Senate rules to the use of the filibuster as it relates to judicial nominees. Because what's happening right now is through the legislative process, through the Congress, we are impacting the ability of the judicial branch to operate because we are using a procedural rule to keep confirmation of judges from moving through the system.
Nathaniel with a question for Joe Miller.
Since Congress needs only a rational basis to regulate commerce, how will you balance the growing need to protect the environment with the need for economic growth?
Well, I think the main thing is to make sure that Congress and the federal government gets out of an area that they shouldn't be in. The idea of commerce and regulating it, for example, comes out of the Commerce Clause that was designed to ensure that states could not impose tariffs against other states. It was designed to effectively ensure free trade amongst the states. And now we've used that as an excuse, again, through activist judges, to basically expand the scope of government in ways that the founders never intended. It's why the EPA can, in fact, regulate wood smoke coming out of wood stoves in Fairbanks. Because of this, I think, very improper expansion of the Commerce Clause. So the idea is to get back to what the Constitution requires, to ensure that the federal government is limited back to where it needs to be. You know, if you limit the government to where it needs to be, then maybe we wouldn't be swimming under the debt load that we're in. And I think even more important to the young people in the audience, you realize that the deficit spending is stealing from your future. Every time that we indebt ourselves, that's further debt to you. That's further taxation on you. And not just you, but your grandkids, probably. I mean, you're looking at, with future unfunded obligations, a debt load per person of hundreds of thousands of dollars. We got to stop it.
And now Caitlin has a question for Scott McAdams.
What is your opinion about the permanent injunction on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell military policy put in place by Judge Virginia Phillips of the United States Central District Court of California?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I support the administration, President Obama's request for a stay to allow a little bit more time to see the injunction through. But let me be clear, I do believe that in the history of our country, as it relates to our armed forces, every move to integrate our armed forces has been met with great opposition. There was a time in this country when people did not believe that service members of different races could stand together and fight together on behalf of our shared freedoms and liberties. There was a time in this country when people have proclaimed that service members of different genders could not serve and stand together in service. I believe that we need to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think it's a policy whose time has passed. I think that we are a mature enough society for those of us who are of different orientations to stand together and serve this country.
And the last question from the We the People students is a question from Elisha to Senator Murkowski.
Senator, the 17th Amendment provides for the direct election of senators by the people. Should we abolish the 17th Amendment?
No, we should not abolish the 17th Amendment. I think that was one of those amendments that, when I mentioned Article 5 of the Constitution, that allowed for amending the Constitution from what had initially been allowed where senators were selected by the state legislatures. I think it was right, I think it was appropriate that it be the people, we the people, that elect our senators. Think about the situation here in Alaska, where just a couple years ago, this state was embroiled in issues of corruption and conflict as it related to basically buying legislators by one company. If you think about repealing the 17th Amendment and where that would have put us, it would have put us in a situation where an oil company would essentially be buying a United States senator. That's not right. I do not support it. And I disagree very strongly with Mr. Miller's suggestion that, in fact, it should be abolished.
I'd like to thank the We the People students from West Anchorage High School for all their thought and effort. Participating in this very important election process. And now we're ready for our closing statements. Each candidate will have 2 minutes, and we will start with Scott McAdams.
Well, thank you again to the World Affairs Council and to the Rotary for this opportunity to address you on issues. I think that the students did a great job. Thank you for those tough and thoughtful questions. Again, this is an incredibly important election at a critically important time in our state's history. It's important that we send a United States Senator to Washington, D.C., who speaks the language of community, someone who understands that Alaska is 300 small towns, even Anchorage, and that as a young state, as an infrastructure poor state, as a matter of equal footing, we need to be developed and there's a case to be made. It's important that we send someone to the United States Senate that understands that a yes vote means yes, and that a no vote means no, that we can't afford to have a part-time senator, someone who stands with Alaska part of the time and stands with their national party 90% of the time. I think that's critically important. It's important we have a United States Senator who can make the case that Alaska's natural resources are like an empty house sitting on the market. We've been using the same old strategies, we've been using the same old agents, working to sell these resource projects for years and years and years. It's time for a new marketing plan. It's time for a new representative. I offer to you, I believe that I'm that person. I believe we have the experience needed to lead. Over the last 8 years of standing before my community, having to account to myself, account for myself, before neighbors, friends, even family members on matters of policy and budget. I look forward to serving the state that I love on behalf of the people that I love, being the people of Alaska. Thank you so much for hearing us. Thank you for having us. And I'd ask you finally, in this election, a vote for Lisa is a vote for Lisa. A vote for Joe is a vote for Joe. And a vote for Scott is a vote for Scott. I ask, no matter what your persuasion or what your philosophy, I ask you to please vote your values, not your fears. Don't vote your strategy. I ask you to please vote your values in this election. If you do that, you can hold your head up high. You've made the right choice. Thank you.
A 2-minute closing statement from Joe Miller.
Boy, I like that, Scott. I do agree. Vote your values. Let me tell you something that really has driven Kathleen and I into this race. Kathleen's here with me this afternoon. I appreciate her coming and supporting me and also bearing up with all the stuff that has occurred over the last several months. But the thing that drove us into the race is that hard times are coming. And I guess the question for you is, do you want somebody that's experienced hard times representing you in those hard times, or somebody that hasn't? Do you want a candidate in these hard times who's risked his life for his country, or someone that hasn't? Do you want a candidate who's going to go out there and try to earn your vote by telling you the hard truth and saying, look, we got to go a different direction? Or do you want a candidate that's out there trying to buy your vote? Or perhaps, you know, obscure the issues by making a reference to a company that corrupted the state legislature, but was also a major contributor over the last 6 years to her own campaign. The point is, look at the issues, look at what's before you, and make it very, very clear that if we were going to have a future together, we have got to drive like no other time before us to open the resource base. That resource base is our future. It's our children's future. And we can sit back and we can say, hey, we're going to work for these earmarks and pork all day long. But the fact of the matter is, unless we put all of those energies in a different direction and join with those that are coming from outside of the system today, I'm talking about all of those people in the lower 48 that have taken on the establishment. Their lives are an open slate now because the establishment doesn't like it when their power is challenged. So they'll stop at nothing, including personal attacks, including attacking somebody's military record, including asking to see medical records. Those are the type of things that we're all willing to do and we are going to do because we want to serve you. You need to know who you got, but you also need to understand you got somebody that's not going to be bought. I'm going to be out there working for you, working for all Alaskans, especially rural Alaska, because this is an incredible state. We do have the capacity to not only provide for ourselves, but everybody that wants to make this their state. We can even lead the nation in what we do. And I ask for your vote on November 2nd, and I ask for your confidence, because I'm going to deliver what I'm telling you that Kathleen and I decided to run this race for. Thank you.
And now for a closing statement from Senator Murkowski.
This election is truly about choice. It is about choice and it is about the direction that we as a state will take. We are at a crossroads at a state. We have seen our state build, as Senator Stevens built it out after the course of 40 years in the Senate there. And we've seen a good framework being built. But we are far, far, far from being at that point where we say, okay, we can send in a team, we can take this thing back, we can be on hold for a few years. We can't afford that as a state. Our kids can't afford that. Our grandkids can't afford that. We need to keep the momentum going in this state. I offer you that clear choice for a forward, positive momentum. I've been serving you for almost 8 years now in the United States Senate. I've built up the seniority. I am the ranking member on the Energy Committee. I hope to be the chairman of that committee to help set energy policy for not only this state, but for this country. I'm serving you on the Appropriations Committee to be in a place where we've not only got the authorizing committees in energy, in Indian affairs, in health, education, labor, pensions, but also to help on the appropriating side as well. So what does this mean to us? It means we're talking about jobs. We're talking about the opportunities that we have as a state. I ask you, as you consider in this next week, weigh what it would mean to our state if we should end up being the state with the least seniority in the United States Senate for not only this next 6 years, but perhaps even further than that. What will that do to us? This is a critical election for us. I respectfully ask for your vote. Fill it in, write it in. Thank you so much.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with the candidates running for United States Senator in Alaska's general election on November 2nd. The Rotary Clubs of Anchorage and the Alaska World Affairs Council hosted Democrat Scott McAdams, Republican Joe Miller, writing candidate Lisa Murkowski, and students from West High School's We the People program, who provided the questions on the United States Constitution in the second half of the program. Held at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage, the senatorial forum was recorded on Tuesday, October 26, 2010. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.